Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Riley Brennan joins us today from Michigan. He is the co-founding partner of Trux, a venture capital fund for entrepreneurs building the future of transportation by making transportation safer, accessible, and sustainable. Prior to launching Trux, he was a lecturer in the Stanford Engineering Department focused on mobility and transportation innovation. And also during that time, he was the executive director of the REVS Automotive Research Program that was aligned to those same themes. And prior to that, he held various operating roles with deep communications coverage in the automotive industry, spanning General Motors, NextScreen, and AOL. And some of Trux's current portfolio companies aligned to the discussion today include AI, Bear Flag Robotics, Denim, Gaddock, Jet Zero, Nutonomy, and Stable Auto, amongst many others. So, Riley, great to have you on the show to chat all things future transportation. Appreciate you joining, and welcome to the Heavy Hitters.
Thanks so much, Ty. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we always start with background. So I gave the short snippet, but give us more of that color commentary on your journey from automotive industry to Stanford lecturer to now launching an early stage venture firm on transportation.
Yeah, I think, to be candid, I just started loving cars when I was a kid and always wanted to figure out a way to, you know, spend my life doing that kind of work. So when I was, you know, real young, I had posters of, you know, Volkswagen GTIs on the wall and race cars and things like that. And I probably, when I was real young, I thought I was either going to work, you know, maybe at, you know, an automaker or something like that. Just wanting to stay around the idea of working with vehicles. And that's really what I've done my whole life. And I, you know, definitely, even though now as an investor for the last decade, you know, didn't start that way, kind of arrived at finance relatively late in life. But started, you know, over 25 years ago in the auto industry. My first real job was when I was an undergrad. I worked at a car magazine in the late 90s when print magazines made money. And that was kind of the first job I had, you know, $7 an hour while I was a student at Michigan. And, you know, been sort of in the business ever since.
Excellent. Well, the domain experience you bring into the finance, shall we say, venture industry, we'll talk about it today, but invaluable. And I'm jealous because I think you were covering like the C5R announcement back in the day. And if I could only get my hands on a C8Z06, that's the dream car here. So I'm jealous. We could digress this podcast a lot, but I will not. I'll keep us on track. So maybe next, Riley, set the stage for the listeners a little bit, a little more detail about Trux with some of the context of the fund's history, including some of the, you know, kind of high level data points about the mandate.
Yeah, Trux is an early stage venture fund focused on the future of transportation. And, you know, we're trying to make really aggressive bets in ideas that, frankly, can make transportation climate positive in the future. And, you know, in our world, that means making it cleaner, safer, more accessible. Trux is a pretty small firm. My partners, Jeff, Kate, and Panith, we're based in San Francisco, and we make kind of usually the first check in a company's life, first institutional check. So sometimes a company will raise a few dollars from, you know, maybe an aunt, uncle, or family or something like that. But Trux is writing typically, you know, $1 million or $2 million investment. Often we're the first kind of real outside investor in the company's life. And we help them get off the ground and sometimes get, you know, their first customers. And our mandate is really transportation at large. So we've done things, you know, as maybe varied as commercial trucks, you know, passenger cars, energy, aviation, aerospace, bicycles. Kind of, I think about it as like anything that, you know, maybe a kindergartner would draw on a piece of paper, you know, we'll evaluate that. So about 1,000 companies a year we see now, and, you know, we'll usually make an investment about 5 or 6 per year. So it's a pretty tight funnel. And fortunately now we get to look at a lot of great, you know, founders who are starting things. Sometimes we even talk to them before they, you know, leave their jobs at Google or Zooks or something like that.
Excellent. Well, we'll use that setup of seeing 1,000 of this theme every year for the next question. And it's, of course, someone who's been as immersed in the automotive and transportation industry as you've been for 2 decades, right? Big corporate to academia to now venture. I thought it'd be fun to do a look back of sorts on the macro themes you've seen evolve in the future of transportation theme. And then now to current day, how the sector's become safer, accessible, and sustainable, as you guys define it, via the innovation efforts you've been helping push. So maybe look back and where we're at now.
Yeah, I guess, you know, one of the maybe interesting things about transportation when we started the fund going back a decade ago, we always thought, man, you know, this is an industry that you can measure in the trillions. It deserves its own investment focus from venture, and specifically in our world from early stage venture. And we're typically looking at seed rounds. And, you know, since we started, there have been a few of these larger themes that have come in and out of, you know, trend. And, you know, when we first began trucks, definitely a huge majority of the pipeline was focused on automated vehicles. And so if you go back to that kind of 2015 to maybe 2017 era, you had a lot of people starting automated vehicle companies. Part of it was, of course, because there were these landmark acquisitions, you know, Aptiv, Delphi bought Nutonomy, and, you know, Cruise is bought by GM. So there are these kind of big landmark things that were going on in addition to what Google was doing. So that was kind of, you know, the first wave of our fund, a lot of autonomy. And then a few years after that, you know, the shared scooter and shared asset city boom came online, and things like Bird and Lime, et cetera. And then kind of in the 2020s, 2021s, you saw this huge focus on commercial electric vehicles. And that, you know, resulted in, or maybe ended in, the SPAC era of 21, 22, when you had something like 35 different automotive companies that SPAC'd. Most of those, you know, have gone quite poorly. And since that time, there's of the recovery, I would say there's been a huge focus on decarbonization. And so different sort of angles of attack on clean energy, clean powertrains, hydrogen, batteries, charging, things like that. So there's always kind of a, you know, ebb and flow of topics where a generalist VC might hop into transportation momentarily. Fortunately for us, and or maybe depending on how you look at it, like, you know, our condition is that we're in this for the long run, regardless of what the themes are. So we'll be here doing this work even when they're, you know, two or three cycles down the road, when there are other, you know, fanciful ideas that bring, you know, the generalists to our field.
Yeah, well, another great segue to the point of how expansive that market, again, regardless of themes, lots of different ways to approach it. And so maybe kind of narrowing that in, and given the trajectory, how has the venture investing part of this, specifically in transport mobility, shifted in recent years, right? You mentioned the scooter mm-hmm. blitz, and then obviously, you know, ourselves included, a part of the SPAC boom and bust. So the question there, are you seeing the mix of investors changing as trends like EVs, autonomous vehicles, et cetera, become more pervasive and maybe understood in the market? And, you know, combined with that, what's the role value that, you know, you and I both know, the specialized and sector focused funds like trucks, how that plays into this world, as you mentioned, with the generalists? So what's the shifting side of this on a venture investing perspective?
Yeah, you know, for us, when we say transportation, and, you know, our interests are pretty diverse, you know, from aviation to automobiles.
Right.
To be honest, part of it is that we feel we need to do that. The large industrial categories are highly cyclical and probably always will be. And so if you only, let's say, for example, if you only focused on, you know, buying and selling used car dealerships, there's a period of time when you might be able to make a good amount of money and find stuff where the market was valuing it correctly. And then there's going to be a period of 6 or 7 years of kind of fallow years, right? So what we've always believed at Trucks is that you have to look at all these different industries, and they tend to actually have a different time phase to them. So theoretically, there's always stuff that's undervalued and probably stuff that's overvalued. And the more kind of the closer you are to hardware and to these industrial categories, the more likely you will be to experience those cycles. So we kind of, that, you know, plays into our interest in being pretty broad. And to your point and your question about the different, you know, kind of investors, I definitely think one of the things about the last 2 or 3 years in venture in our world is just the emergence of climate funding and, you know, funds that are specifically set up to do climate related investing. Some of them have, you know, deep connection to government or to kind of alternative sources of finance. And also, I think, you know, there's been an emergence of, you know, investors that, because of their LP base and because of the GP, are very, obviously very dogmatic about wanting to fund things that are only going to be cleaner for the earth. And that's really interesting. I've also found within that group that there are some very specific set of beliefs around which energy kind of ideas they should and should not be funding. And what I mean by that, even maybe more to clarify even further, you know, you'll meet some climate investors that believe that everything should be battery electric. Some that, for example, might not believe in hydrogen at all. And they think hydrogen is, you know, a vast conspiracy by the oil and gas industry or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it, even just kind of seeing the new wave of investors come into our space, they have with them a specific set of beliefs, which is pretty fascinating and also, I think, necessary to calibrate on if you're going to fundraise within that group.
Yeah, and I tell me if I'm wrong here, but to your comment about diversifying the different modalities is one thing, aerospace on the road. The idea that there are cyclicalities in these industries, I know for us ourselves, right? Manufacturing, construction, logistics, different industries per se, but you have to diversify that risk. And so the idea you would be just kind of sold over on one energy modality versus other seems constraining in a lot of ways, especially I'm guessing, Riley, if they talk to you and how could it actually be applied to transportation, and you've got a more open-minded approach would be my guess.
Yeah. Or just, you know, a portfolio theory on this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Where, you know, generally, and not without going too deep into kind of the portfolio construction way that we think about our business at Trucks, but, most of the time you'll find that our core flagship funds have about 28 to 32 investments. And we like to have kind of a basket of ideas around a particular theme. And so I often, you know, believe that we're usually smart enough to figure out kind of where certain things are going. And we might not be exactly smart enough to pick the one specific company that drives all the value in that theme. So we might as well take a look at a few different, you know, ways that we can approach it and, you know, a few different kind of bites of the apple. So we did that with like automated vehicles. We definitely, you know, did a few investments that were related to commercial vehicles and autonomy. Thankfully, one of them was Gattac, you know, in that sort of basket back in the day. And the same would be true within, you know, ways you could think about battery and charging. You know, we'll probably do a few investments across these different ideas. That's just the way that we, fortunately, because the way our fund is set up, the way we do it.
Absolutely. Portfolio theory and fund construction critical, as we all, I like to say, we'll have a prepared mind on our sectors. I think it's a value we're adding. But at the end of the day, the founders are where we're going to pull us to the right opportunity. So shout out to the people out there building. Well, I'll kind of move us forward, maybe align to some of your comments around this push on sustainability, bringing in new entrants and interested investing in these markets. And so at Iron Spring, we certainly believe in building up ecosystem around the entrepreneurs and companies that are looking to advance this digital industrial trend, hence the podcast and other things. Transportation mobility specifically stand out amongst those industries. It truly requires collaboration and cooperation across governments, research institutions, large corporates, and the startups, of course, pursuing the innovation so that any of this can have scale and gain widespread adoption. So all the buildup, and given you've sat on many sides of that table, you know, around even key issues related to R&D and building new novel tech, what's your perspective on what's needed over the next decade to support kind of a broader, functioning, more productive ecosystem of diverse stakeholders to really help push transport and mobility innovation forward where we want it to go in the next decade? And obviously, Riley, I think you even have your own newsletter, a job board, a website that really was about promoting ecosystems. So you clearly are in this fight as well.
Yeah, transportation is one of those, it's such a multidisciplinary field. That's perhaps why it's so interesting for me personally to spend my life in this space. But also when I talk to students, I think it's kind of the ultimate industry of industries, where if you look at, for example, the team that's required to put together, whether it's a car company or a new battery company or something, you really need basically every skill set brought to bear, from all different forms of engineering to design to business to policy. So which is why it's so incredibly hard to kind of, if you think about starting, let's say a new car company or a new aviation company, it's such a daunting task because of all those different types of things you'd have to do exceptionally well. And that's why it's such a great opportunity for young people and for people kind of coming from maybe like broader tech into our field. And maybe the thing that, to your question, Ty, about what's required for the future, I think the really interesting angle, particularly for young people kind of coming out of an MBA program or coming out of university undergrad, is around regulation. I think that we have, if you talk to lawmakers who are thinking about things that are going on in transportation, there's definitely a knowledge gap between what the industry, like how the industry is pushing certain forms of technology, and how our lawmakers are kind of thinking about it. And I'm sure that, I'm not alone in thinking, like, whenever I've seen a lot of those hearings of, our lawmakers talking to, certain startup CEOs, whether it's from, tech or social media, you definitely have the feeling that, your 15-year-old nephew has a better handle on what's going on at Facebook and Instagram than the lawmakers that are in charge of kind of thinking mm-hmm. about it and in some ways regulating these industries. And I think that's the biggest opportunity for, particularly in the transportation space, the way that we kind of interface with regulators and lawmakers is part and parcel of how they come to market. I mean, some of the ideas that we fund don't really even have a regulatory envelope around them, and they kind of require so much learning and so much kind of, in some ways, that is a lot of development that needs to be done early on. So it's just a great area of opportunity. It's also one of the things that when companies don't do well in our space, sometimes it's product and sometimes it's customer, but it's also a lot to do with the way they have or have not interfaced with government. And, there's automated vehicle examples of that that we're going through now, where I still think, a lot of those laws and regulation are highly in flux, which impacts me as an investor and ultimately the value of the business.
It's a great call out. I mean, you mentioned the company Gatik earlier, right? Autonomous kind of middle mile, I'd broadly define it. But, I was at the Perot Hillwood. They do an annual mobility summit. And I don't think people really realize, from a government perspective, that Alliance Texas ecosystem there in DFW, it's Gatik. You've got Kodiak running autonomous lanes mm-hmm. out to El Paso. And if I understand correctly, the way they've brought the regulatory side of that ecosystem together to enable some of these innovative solutions to have a chance, we need more efforts like that that are going to collaborate with innovators in regulatory environments and all the others included. So I'm hoping that's the same theme, Riley, but impressive. And I have to give them a shout out because I think they're doing it well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe then I want to ask one more question back to trucks investment mandate. We've talked, thematically and themes and how we build ecosystem. Your portfolio has a range of really exciting innovators that span, electric powered aircrafts to robots that wash cars, LiDAR tech, but also spanning all the way over to call it the pure play software, lots of data involved platforms, like with infrastructure planning, including our shared investment, the Stable Auto guys, right? Mm-hmm. So with that diversity of application and business model, kind of the point of this question, obviously hardware and software, there's lots of discussion on that. How do you think about sourcing? Is there a mix of what you think about hardware versus software? And probably more so, how do you think about diligencing the requirements for a hardware-enabled business versus just pure software? If we could go mm-hmm. down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I guess, to that point, there's so many different wrinkles and opportunities in these markets that even when you know a lot about them, and I would say historically, because of my background and backgrounds of my partners at trucks, We know a lot about the auto industry, and which is great, which is an advantage for sure. And our contacts and our relationships are deep in that world. But I'm always a little bit reticent to bring that fully to bear, because I think when you have decades of experience in a field, you get a little calcified. And so you can actually turn your mind off to ideas that, you know, might have just been wrong timing, but actually a great idea. And so I don't know how you feel, Ty, but I'm always amazed when founders come to us and they open up a part of a market that I might have a lot of experience in, but I didn't realize could be a huge opportunity. And Stable is a probably good example of that, where, you know, essentially they've realized that there's an opportunity in things like dynamic pricing of chargers and electricity that, you know, could really be really transformative for that industry and for their business model. And even though I've been looking at charging for a decade, you know, something that you have to have great founders that are listening to the market to open your eyes to it. So that's kind of, to me, super inspiring. When it comes to diligence in those ideas, I think one of the hardest parts at the early stage is, you know, we often have to make an investment decision before there's traction and before there's potentially even a product built. So we like to see a little bit of work done on the product and a lot of customer discovery. But, you know, we often have to make these decisions pretty early. And so we usually are relying on is the way that we kind of look at how the founders are assessing their own risks. Our best tool at Trux is to, you know, see how the founders are thinking about reducing that risk, and then joining them, you know, for that adventure. And paradoxically, we need a lot of risk on the table because I want to be the first investor and arguably paying the lowest price in the history of the company for buying those shares. So I need there to be so much risk that it most of the world doesn't actually think it's a good idea. And then over time, you know, the founders and us and everybody else is going to work on convincing the world of the opposite.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. Keeping an open mind and, you know, our job is to have a contrarian view. Now, of course, if there's a hardware part of the business model, I think there's enough. This podcast, we've talked to enough folks about this. There's plenty of research out there. There's ways of being capital efficient, even if hardware is involved. I think lots of ways of thinking about it, but your point of keeping an open mind after you, what'd you say, the calcified view of what you've seen not work in the past. I agree. It's a challenge, to say the least. Well, maybe with the final question here, I'll zoom out a bit. It's always a fun one. But your depth of expertise at Trux, our listeners, I think we'd be really excited to kind of look into 2024. What types of trends have you seen around this ecosystem of transportation mobility? And it's a little bit of a section we like to call what's hot and what's hype. And so what technologies or maybe business model approaches you're seeing that actually are getting some scale versus maybe innovation that's promising, but likely a little bit overhyped for now, because I think you said it well, or I'll rephrase, adventure too early is the same as wrong a lot of times. So curious, what's hot and what's hype, Riley?
Yeah. You know, because of the funding around IRA, there have been a lot of, I think, things that were for many years too expensive to fund, or you know, different components that were too expensive. And hydrogen is one of those areas that, particularly for heavy vehicles, whether you're talking about commercial trucks or maritime or aviation, is having a moment. And so you have a lot of big industrial players that, you know, I think if a battery electric option was on the table for them with fast charging, they'd probably go for that. But in the absence of that, hydrogen is kind of a really interesting one. So we've been spending a lot more time there. We've made a few investments in hydrogen, including most recently in a company called Vern out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So that is an area that I think even, you know, if you look into 2025, it's a coin flip as to who's going to be president next year in the U.S., right? And I think one of the things that's fascinating about hydrogen is I think regardless of who's president, you're going to have a lot of interest in that from many different facets around logistics and transportation and kind of heavy-duty vehicles. And then an area that I think is probably a little bit overhyped is just the notion that kind of every single form factor will be battery electric really fast. So I'm a big believer in battery electric vehicles for passenger cars. And I think that in many cases, there, you know, we're going to have better infrastructure, faster charging. Most vehicles that are smaller than a sedan or smaller are probably a good candidate for being battery electric. But I think that if you look at all the categories, the thought that all of them are going to be battery electric, you know, in the next 5 years, is probably too aggressive of a timeline, just because of what the customer is expecting and for the price that they want to pay. So, yeah, that's, things are always kind of moving really quickly in our space. And that's one of them where there's definitely a change there. And there's probably a new interest in things like cleaner forms of, you know, other sources, whether it's hydrogen or other things. So, yeah, that's kind of how I see it.
Excellent trends. We're going to see how this all plays out for sure. Well, we always love to bring the discussion at the end here back to the founders specifically. And so any words of wisdom you may have for them who are thinking about reaching out or engaging Trucks VC if they're thinking about venture for their path. We always love to split maybe a key to success as they enter the discussion or a common challenge to just head off out the gate.
Yeah, I think, you know, from our perspective, we just love when people can communicate their idea and the risk really well. So I always love when founders are honest about the things that they don't have figured out in the business, whether it's the, you know, part of the product itself or perhaps the team. You know, I'm sure that for you, Ty, you've probably seen this where a first-time founder will often try to cover up things that they don't have figured out yet. And a second or third time founder will be quite open and honest about it. I like to think about it almost like an honest online dating profile.
Sure.
Might as well be upfront about it now. And I really like when founders do that. It just kind of opens us up to how realistic and how full, you know, in a full scope they're looking at the business. So, keeping that in mind is definitely great and can produce some good early discussions with us and other investors.
Yeah, it's gonna come up in the board meeting not too distant after that wire closes. Might as well start the partnership journey way earlier than that, right? In some regards. Awesome. Well, let's wrap up here. A little section we call quick hitters. So if you're ready for some Q&A, we'll jump in.
Let's do it.
All right. What is the number one trait you'd be evaluating a founder who's building in your specific sector?
You know, from our world, I would say the ability to attract a great team of people who can balance their skills and maybe where they're weak. So, you know, being a magnet for great talent.
Ooh, that's a good one. I got to ask a sub question. If there's an x-axis on one end, deep domain experience about the industry, and then on the far other end of the spectrum, tech and product, let's go, let's build fast. What do you need to see out of that founding team?
I think that, you know, particularly when you go into hardware stuff, there's a lot of capital risk and there's also a lot of creative opportunities for different types of finance. So I think if you have somebody who's really great at product, somebody who's great at customer and experience in that selling to the customers, but then also someone who has experience selling or talking to the capital markets. And I'm not talking about just venture, but, you know, when you build a hardware company, you're going to have to talk to different alternative sources of finance and, you know, different ways you can use debt and things like that. I always think that when you have those kind of, think about a basketball team, you know, you have like somebody who can, a point guard, you have somebody, a center, right? So a startup team, hopefully a little bit like that with different skill sets.
I like it, except for my old Utah Jazz where we were missing the number five guy. So I got to have the blend. I like it. All right. Digresses. What's one resource, book, podcast, blog you'd recommend our audience to follow in the ecosystem?
That's a great question. I really love, there's a, in the transportation world, there's a podcast called The Autonocast, which is really great and kind of covers news and discussion in our world. And I think that that's probably within the auto space, one of my favorite follows. When it comes to general tech, I still love Ben Thompson and Mr. Techery. And so I listen to that podcast, his daily update and the longer ones he does. So I'm a big fan of that for kind of generalist tech and perspective.
Awesome. Well, who's one person who could be on the show to help us wave the flag and keep building ecosystem to our earlier discussion?
Yeah, I think when it comes to kind of on the commercial front, there's so many interesting approaches to logistics and different ways we're thinking about the ecosystem. I think maybe looking at things like rail, and particularly now that there's different approaches and kind of entrepreneurs who are building in rail, that we might get to some new things that kind of change the paradigm for timing and cost for rail versus trucks. And one founder that might be interesting is Matt Soule from Parallel Systems, who's building something that is kind of in some ways like a packetizing rail to make it more efficient. And we're not an investor in Parallel, but I'm impressed with the vision, and I think he'd be a good person for you to talk to about that.
Yeah, absolutely critical mode. I like the call out there. And then finally, best way for folks to reach out to you after the show.
Yeah, our website is trucks.vc. My email is rpb@trucks.vc, and a bunch of resources on the site. And if you want to submit, something to us as a team, there's an entry form there. And we have a newsletter that you mentioned that, is one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing because we find it very valuable. So you can sign up for a newsletter on trucks.vc.
Awesome. Well, we've got a fun decade ahead of us, because I agree, this is the long haul for me as well. So I'm excited to team up, find more stuff to work on with you, and push this ecosystem forward, Riley. So thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.